Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
There is full government overreach coming out of the Department of Education at the hands of the state superintendent. And that means that he is determining how to administer the ESA program outside of his executive authority.
I have spent my entire life advocating for those who do not have a voice, and I am very proud of the coalition of people that have gathered to try to help us get to that next level and get to Congress.
In fighting against the extremists in Congress, like the ones right now, that we have to face in D.C., to make sure that we stand up for Southern Arizona, fight back against MAGA, Republicans, and Donald Trump.
We have to right now finance about $6 billion a day in borrowing. And almost all that, from today through the next decade, is interest and the growing cost of Medicare.
Andy Biggs would only need something like half of Charlie Kirk's support to get up to a tie or above with Karen Taylor Robson. So that seems very, very doable.
So for them to turn around, first give people the false promise of a dismissal and saying you're free to go, and then detain them, is cruel and inhumane and tramples upon the very promise of what the United States of America should be.
And joining me to talk about a new entrant into the GOP primary for state school superintendent, a new poll in next year's governor's race, and more, our former state lawmaker, Regina Cobb. Regina, good morning.
Good morning.
And Sam Richard of Consilium Consulting. Sam, good morning to you.
Great to be here.
So, Regina, let me start with you with State Treasurer Kimberly Yee getting into the GOP primary for Superintendent of Public Instruction. Of course, the incumbent, Tom Horn, also a Republican. I'm curious, first off, just what do you make of the fact that the Freedom Caucus, the sort of the right-wing group in the GOP led by State Senator Jay Kaufman, is putting up another candidate in a statewide race?
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting race. And why are we allowing somebody like Turning Point to dictate who's going up or who is not going up? Kimberly Yee has done a really decent job as the treasurer. I know she's termed out, so this is probably a natural progression for her. So I don't necessarily feel that it's going to be a Turning Point put up. But I think it's going to make our race interesting with Horn. Both, you know, I consider him a conservative, and then I don't know how much more you can be conservative and move to the right. So I think that's what Turning Point's looking at.
Well, and it looks like ESAs, the Empowerment Scholarship Accounts, basically school vouchers, are sort of at the forefront of this.
Yeah.
We've heard Jay Kaufman say that Tom Horn is the single biggest threat to the universal ESA program, basically because Horn's office is saying some purchases by families that get ESAs weren't appropriate. Like, how do you see that issue? It's certainly one that a lot of people care about in Arizona. How do you see that issue sort of shaping this primary?
I think that's going to be the biggest part of this primary. I personally was always a proponent of ESAs, but I wasn't a proponent of not having accountability for what they've bought. And so I would hope that I think that that's what we're trying to look at is the accountability piece. And I think there needs to be accountability for what is purchased. There's some things that are educational, books, those kind of things. Baby grand piano is not educational. It could be, but it's probably not needed to be able to give that education to a piano student. So I think there's things that we need to look at.
So, Sam, from the Democratic side, you popping the popcorn?
Absolutely. I mean, we have that, you know, the microwave is ready to go and we are watching. I mean, you know, there's a kind of a political science thought of the Overton window. And I feel like we're now at the Overton skylight. you know, there's just like it's completely, you know, moving in all sorts of different directions. I mean, I don't think that anyone has ever considered Tom Horn to be even close to moderate. He's historically been a very conservative person, so to try to outflank to his right is a very bold move, and we'll see how that works out for him, Cotton. Excuse me.
Thank you for the dodgeball reference.
You got it. But I think, you know, the other thing that's interesting for me is to back up what Gina was saying here is that ESAs really are going to be a flashpoint in this race. This office itself is highly administrative. This is not a political office. This is really someone who kind of funnels federal dollars and federal policy and administers that in our 250 plus or minus school districts, and now has administrative functions over the ESA program. So to make it a very political race is going to have very interesting outputs on kind of where the conversation is headed.
Are you expecting to see a high profile, sort of a big name Democrat jump into this race? Because we've seen some names, and they're not, I think, names that a lot of folks would necessarily know in the political world.
Yeah, I would say yes with a caveat. There are a handful of names that are, I think, are high profile in education circles and education community, but it's not going to be a high profile, politically astute individual or something like that. Because again, this isn't a highly political job. This is not the governor's office. This is not the attorney general. You have a bully pulpit to talk about education policy, but again, this is mostly a finance and administrative function. So to make it political is really a fundamental misunderstanding of what the office function is.
Regina, I want to ask you about Kimberly Yee specifically, because the conventional wisdom 3 years ago when she was reelected as treasurer was that one of, if not the biggest reasons she won, was because she was talking about issues that voters cared about. She was not seen as sort of a MAGA candidate, as top of the ticket Republican candidates who were more MAGA candidates lost, in some cases fairly handily, in some cases obviously by very slim margins. But she was able to win because she was seen as more of like a mainstream establishment Republican. And now she's running basically as a Freedom Caucus candidate.
Absolutely. It kind of changes the dynamics of where Kimberly's at. And I don't know if it's a positive thing. I think she was sitting in a good spot when she was in as treasurer. And she was a logical person. I know she was pushing for a Trump endorsement when she was running for office. But
she ran for governor,
what,
3 years ago,
yes,
right?
Yes. And she wasn't making any headway. And I think that that's one of the reasons she's not running this year. And so this is kind of a good spot for her. Mm-hmm. I think she could fall into this and this would be a good position for her. But to just to run to the right and, like you said, be a mega candidate, I think that's almost a mistake. For her.
Yeah, I'm curious, Sam, you know, having a Democrat wade into Republican internal politics. I mean, it is kind of an interesting switch, I guess, if switch is the right word for it, for somebody like Treasurer Yee, who was seen as a sort of, you know, mainstream Republican candidate now running with the Freedom Caucus.
Right. And it's not completely outside of her political trajectory. She is a former chair of the Senate Education Committee. But even that, if you kind of strip away any kind of issue set passion or anything like that, you have someone who really outperformed other statewide Republican candidates in the last election cycle. I think that the state treasurer's race was one of the very few that was called within, you know, the first hour or two of results.
And she won pretty handily.
Yeah, very handily, right? But I think, you know, if you look at the next election cycle and kind of what its machinations might look like, even if Kimberly Yee loses the primary, she's still eligible to be someone's lieutenant governor. This is the first election cycle where we'll have an election for that office, which isn't named during the primary. It's a post-primary nomination process. And furthermore, she retains that statewide name identification for perhaps a future race when the gubernatorial office is more of an open race for someone like Senator Yee.
That's interesting. Sam, let me stick with you and ask, you mentioned the governor's race.
Yes.
We had a couple polls this week looking at the governor's race. Of course, polls snapshot in time. We're a long way out, you know, a million years away politically. There was a survey from Noble Predictive Insights, which found Karen Taylor Robeson leading the primary by just a little bit over Andy Biggs. Charlie Kirk was in this poll as well, although he's not running. He's endorsed to Andy Biggs. And then in the general election, the incumbent governor, Katie Hobbs, led both Karen Taylor Robeson and Andy Biggs by about 2 points, with a pretty big number of undecided, 17% undecided in both against both Taylor Robeson and Biggs. Takeaways from those numbers?
Yeah, I don't foresee, and I'm not, you know, a political crystal ball, you know, expert or anything, but, you know, I play one on the radio every now and again. You know, I think when you have such a significant number of undecideds, looking at the news cycles that have happened in the first few months of the Trump administration and what's going to happen over the next year or so, I really doubt that undecided is going to break predominantly for the president's party. So I think that we're at a point where we are approaching the high water mark for the Republican nominee, whoever it may be. And I think that if it is Congressman Biggs, you're seeing his high water mark, because the people who are going to come out to vote tend to make it a referendum on the president and the president's party. So I think that the significant number of undecideds are trying to see, like, is Governor Hobbs going to give me enough reason to show up to the polls for her? And I believe that she has done plenty to make that case, and she still has another legislative session and, frankly, one to wrap up here.
Regina, I mean, do you agree with that? Do you think that, I mean, obviously 17%, that number will come down as we get closer to the election, one would assume. But let's say that these numbers are within the range as we get closer. Do you agree that some majority of those undecideds break toward the incumbent?
I don't. This is one of the things that Sam and I disagree on. I don't think we hit a high water mark like what Sam said. I think there is undecideds are undecided. And what I think the reason the undecideds are there is because I don't feel that Governor Hobbs has done as good of a job as she could do. She's got one more year. You're right. And we'll see what she does in this next year and what happens during this this budget cycle. That's going to make a lot of difference, too. She's been pretty much non-existent in the last two budget cycles. And so hopefully, we'll see what she does this next cycle and where she goes to. I think that what was really interesting about those two polls is how different they were.
Yeah, there was another poll that showed Congressman Biggs with a really sizable lead over Karen Taylor-Robeson in the GOP primary.
Yeah, and that was huge. And then to have this one, the Noble poll to come out, and I got to say, he's pretty well known and he's, respected as far as a pollster goes. I don't put a lot into polls, especially this early in. So,
as somebody who has run in elections and probably been polled herself,
absolutely, I was down every time. I was down every time. Yes, and so that I just kind of push them to the side and say, just keep running as if you're running last.
So let me ask the former Appropriations Committee Chair, former Representative Cobb here. We saw this week or heard this week that there are talks now. At sort of the high level, not like in terms of the people involved necessarily, but in terms of like broad outlines of a new state budget. The deadline's coming up in about a month. What, a month from today? So I guess based on your experience, what are you thinking based on where we are in this year's process?
Well, I think they're way behind where they should be right now. Usually we start at this point in January. And so we're sitting, 5 months behind now. And for them to finish up at the end of June is going to be difficult. They may have to go into a special session because I know there's going to be a lot of people missing towards the end of June, mm-hmm. and which is surprising to me also. As a lawmaker, we weren't allowed to miss. And so I'm seeing these breaks come up, and they're saying, well, people are on vacation, people are doing this. We weren't allowed to have vacations and take time until we were done with the budget. So I think they're way behind. I think the work needs to be accomplished. I think they need to start sitting down and getting it done.
It seems as though one of the big issues here is that the House and Senate are not necessarily on the same page. It's not even so much the Republicans in the legislature and the Democratic governor are not on the same page, although I'm sure there are differences there, too. But the House and Senate seem to have pretty different approaches.
Well, I think the Senate's going back to what they did a few years ago, which we saw as a big mistake.
The so-called Oprah budget, right?
Yeah, where they give each person that signs on to the budget a certain amount of money that they could use for their districts. And some of the issues, the pieces that were put into place aren't state functions. I think we're going to go back to that again, and we're going to have a lot of problems with that. I think it's not a good way to appropriate dollars. There's a lot of functions within the state that need to be done that if you pulled those funds together, they could all be utilized. I know the House is thinking on that line. So I tend to move with the House. I think that they need to get in and start looking at what the functions are that we need to fund, and let's get it done.
So, Sam, I'm curious from your mind, how much of the delay, as Regina outlined, is due to partisan bickering. You know, you have a Republican-led legislature and a Democratic governor. How much of it might come down to economic uncertainty and not really knowing how much money the state's going to have to work with?
I think that's a big, big piece of it. I think that historically, even though some of the work did historically begin in January, folks have tended to wait until what we call the FAC meeting in April,
the Finance Advisory Committee,
right? And now we've passed that, but that was really when the conversation started. We've had a recent numbers from JLBC that have shown that we're now $200 million or so above the baseline that was initially put in.
Yeah.
But, you know, the governor really did put a stake in the ground in January with her executive budget. And I think that there have been, you know, some loose and high level talks. But to go back to the Oprah budget, I mean, I think part of the reason why that's Senate's idea is they have a much more well-behaved studio audience, right? in the House, we're looking at, you know, Jerry Springer or Maury Povich kind of style, right?
Wow.
So I think that, you know, where we're headed in this direction is what we really need to have is the principals, the actual hosts of those shows have the conversation. So get outside of giving, you know, free cars away to everybody, but really have the leaders of these chambers and the executive tower sit down and hash out the details. And not every year has the legislature moved in uniform action, to your point earlier. I would not be surprised if perhaps one chamber and the governor, you know, not unilaterally, because that isn't, you know, correct syntax, but,
yeah,
you know, one chamber and the governor move right forward and kind of play chicken with the other chamber.
Which is kind of what we saw during the Napolitano days, right? When
yes,
the last time there was a Democratic governor, where she would negotiate with the Senate president and the House speaker, but oftentimes she and then Senate President Ken Bennett were at least publicly seen as the ones who were mostly negotiating, and the House kind of decided to go along with it or not.
Right, right. And I don't think that, you know, it's any surprise that Senate President Warren Peterson and Governor Katie Hobbs are not, you know, fully aligned on partisan or political goals. But I think that, you know, both are long stewards and stalwarts of the institution of Arizona state government. And I think that, you know, that professionalism is starting to show.
And I think the lack of those two coming together and having the same goals, they don't have the same goals. And I think that this Oprah way of giving money out, and the governor's for this too, by the way. She gets a chunk of money and mm-hmm. gets to spend it however she wants to spend it. I think that that's why the Senate and the governor are aligning.
Because they both, it's in their both of their best interests.
Yes, yes.
But it's interesting, though, because we heard State Representative Matt Gress, who, of course, was Governor Ducey's budget director, saying, essentially, you know, there's stuff that the governor would basically be responsible for paying for that all of us should be paying for. There are things that are state responsibilities that shouldn't just be on the executive to fund.
I 100% agree with Matt Gress. I worked with Matt Gress when he was working with Governor Ducey. He's an intelligent man, and he's done this before, so he knows what state functions need to be funded. And giving what he said is exactly where they need to move to. And that's what I said. Their philosophies are totally different, so they're not going to come together. This is unusual to see two Republican House and Senate not come together and actually work against the governor and, you know, negotiate in that direction. To see it go the other direction where the governor and the Senate are working against the House is not a normal pattern that we usually run.
Sam, is there an opportunity here for Governor Hobbs, going back to the conversation earlier about the gubernatorial race next year, what should she be doing here in terms of maybe positioning herself, not just to get this budget passed, because they obviously have to do that by, you know, a month from now, but in terms of maybe positioning herself for re-election next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is exactly what she needs to be doing. I mean, she has an equally, if not even more capable and competent OSPB director in Ben Henderson, who has seen and understood these machinations of how to put together a state budget. She has a great lobby team who's working on that, and they're in a position where they're ready to have a conversation when the legislature is ready to have a conversation. The governor does not sine die. It's the legislature's job to put together a budget. And if they're foreclosing on their responsibility to serve the single responsibility that the voters sent them to the state capitol to do, that's their karma, not the governor's.
So, Regina, we talked about some of the economic uncertainty, some more of it this week with a federal court pausing President Trump's tariffs, then an appeals court pausing the pause to allow them to go into effect while the, you know, while the case continues to be litigated. I would imagine from a, if you are an appropriator, like if this was happening when you were Appropriations Committee chair, I'm guessing you wouldn't have a whole lot of hair left.
I wouldn't.
You'd have pulled it
I
all
wouldn't,
out.
Yeah. And the just what Sam was saying about the FAC and how they came out, that's actually the mark that you should be hitting. Because every month that you come in and JLBC comes in with a new number that says that we're higher, it all of a sudden you're like, okay, we got more money than we have to deal with now, or we got less money than we have to deal with. So you want to get it done as quickly as possible and be as efficient as you can. And so for them to wait and to kind of see how things are moving, it's always going to, you're got a moving target.
Is it maybe better or less bad, let's say, to wait in this case, because things seem much more fluid now than they were maybe the last couple of years? Like, things seem to be changing much more quickly.
They are moving much more quickly, but I think it's all because of just what you said, the tariffs. We don't know where we're going to land on that. That could change in 2 weeks.
That could change tomorrow.
It could change in an hour. Yeah, exactly. So if it changes, guess what? Now we're fluctuating again.
Yeah.
So I think just get it done. Be as efficient as you can. Matt Gress, I think, had it right. We just get the functions of the state completed and don't overspend.
Sam, if you were a business owner in this state, how would you be viewing all the tariff news that we had this week?
Oh, I would have no earthly idea on how to navigate this. And I think that, you know, there's this idea that has been circling around some conversations I've been a part of that, you know, a skill set that you need to build if you're going to be in business or in politics under this Trump administration is chaos agility. And so you really have to understand that is this administration's maybe not stated goal, but it is, you know, an overarching goal of everything. So, you know, there was the taco trade was talked about earlier this week,
yeah.
Right? But I think that really, really undergirds this idea that the uncertainty of the litigation of tariffs and you know, what is going to happen until the Supreme Court speaks on this or until Congress actually steps up into their functional role and takes control of the tariff conversation, I think is really going to be there. So I think that is absolutely a big question, and that I'm so glad that I am not a business owner in Arizona currently.
Well, I've seen that my business owners, the dentist in the communities are trying to stockpile. They don't know what's going to happen.
Like materials and supplies and stuff.
So they're buying ahead. So just in case the tariffs go in and it affects what their costs are going to be, they're stockpiling.
That's really interesting. All right, we'll have to leave it there. Regina Cobb, Sam Richard, thanks to you both for coming in. I really appreciate
it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.